Coming up, Alexis Ohanian of Reddit and Hipmunk and Bread Pig joins us to talk about his amazing new project, Lester's Time Has Come. Plus, there's no avoiding Google+. Pinterest is getting into the cooking game. All that and a keyless door on the Social Hour.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Audio bandwidth provided by the new Winamp for Android, featuring wireless sync and one-click iTunes import. Now with free daily music downloads and full-length CD listening parties. Download it for free at winamp.com/android. Bandwidth for the Social Hour is brought to you by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is The Social Hour with Sarah Lane and Amber MacArthur, episode 92, recorded Friday, January 4th, 2013. This episode of The Social Hour is brought to you by Squarespace, the fast and easy way to create a high-quality website, blog, or online portfolio. For a free trial and 10% off your first purchase on new accounts, go to squarespace.com and use the offer code SOCIALHOUR1. And they recently launched a developer platform for complete code control. Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of The Social Hour from Twit World Headquarters in Petaluma, California. I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm Amber MacArthur from South Florida. Hello, Sarah.
Hello, Amber. You're still in FLA, are you?
I am. I'm here for almost a month. That's my confession that I'm working from here for a while. I have a ton of writing to do. I've been busy writing, playing. It's been awesome. So, it's great weather and a lot of snow back in Toronto. So I am going home in about a week. And I would love to say that I'm looking forward to the snow, but that's not exactly the case. I could deal with just the sunshine. But nonetheless, Toronto's a great place.
Except for the snow. I have to say, you look tan. You look like you've been outside. You've got this beautiful sort of coral-colored lamp behind you. I mean, you just look like you're in Florida right now.
I do. You know, it's funny because oftentimes when I do the show, I'm just coming from doing the TV show or a segment on TV, and here I'm literally like jumping out of the pool and putting my hair in a bun and hoping that things work out okay. But the tan is it helps Sarah with not having makeup or a lot of makeup on, so I'm happy for that. And Sarah, you look kind of different to me. I know this isn't about how we look, but nonetheless, I don't know. Is it your hair or something?
I don't know. Nothing
you
really.
Look great.
Thanks. Thank you.
Maybe you're not in stripes and I am, and that's where the confusion lies.
Perhaps. Yeah, I went plaid today and you're like, I don't even know you anymore. Maybe it's because I've stopped drinking so much eggnog. I don't know. Those last couple weeks of December were doozies. But Amber, I'm really excited because this week we haven't had a guest in a few shows. We don't always have a guest on every episode of The Social Hour. It just kind of depends on the news and what we have room for. But we have a return guest. One of our favorites, Alexis Ohanian, is with us again. In fact, he's with us now. Hello, Alexis.
Hello. Hi, Sarah and Amber. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Now, for anybody who missed Alexis's last appearance on The Social Hour, we were all trying to remember, gosh, was it a year ago? Was it over a year ago? It was something along those lines. We talked about Reddit. You're the co-founder of Reddit, Bread Pig. At the time, I mean, you're still evangelizing for Hipmunk. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes. I moved into a sort of advisory role once SOPA and PIPA got started last fall. And made politics, unfortunately, my full-time gig. But fortunately, the internet triumphed, and so all that work against SOPA and PIPA was not in vain. And now I'm just off to doing more Bread Pig stuff and writing.
Well, that's
very
amazing.
Cool.
Go ahead, Amber.
Oh, I was going to say, this most recent project that I had heard about, I know it got lots of coverage. Very exciting story. I think that you told them about me about this initially when we met up in Halifax in October, and those were sort of early days, but now Lester's time has truly come. So let's talk a little bit about this project.
Sure. And yes, I was very thrilled to be in Halifax at the Pop Explosion Conference, keynoting about this very story. Y'all were the first to hear about it. We hadn't yet gone live with the Kickstarter, but I met up with, well, I should back this up. In March of last year, many of us, millions of us, saw this photo of a man holding a gold record in front of his face with a sign explaining that even though he was part of a band that had made decades worth of hits, he was broke. He was penniless because he had never received a dime in royalties from the record company. And it really struck a chord with me, as well as many. And we quickly sort of sleuthed. There's the photo. Yes, we quickly sort of sleuthed that this was Lester Chambers of the Chambers Brothers, you know, a soul legend. And, you know, at the time we were working on another Bread Pig project. It was probably Zach Wiener's book, Trial of the Clone. Anyway, we had something else on our plate, but we thought, wouldn't this be cool if we could maybe get in touch with them, maybe find a way to help connect the dots and maybe help them get an album funded? Well, a few months go by and we thought, all right, let's give this a go. And I really didn't think there was a chance in hell that, you know, Lester Chambers would respond to some guy from the internet. But fortunately he did. And it wasn't long before we were able to get on a call with him and basically say, listen, you know, there are so many new innovations coming out now, thanks to the open internet, that are letting artists circumvent the middleman and go directly to their fans. Why don't we just help you get a Kickstarter campaign going? You know, you're going to do all the real work. You're going to figure out, you know, what this album's going to be all about. And we'll just bring a team out and shoot a video and help kind of manage the campaign for you. But you're going to own this album. And this Bread Pig project has just exceeded all of our expectations. And, you know, getting the chance to actually spend a day with Lester and his son Dylan was incredibly moving. And actually we have footage. I don't know a good segue for it, but can we roll the footage?
Yeah, absolutely. Let's look at your time with Lester.
Very good trip.
Great man.
Dylan.
I just love making people happy. I love seeing people dance. I love seeing people smile. If it hadn't been for me having music to go back to after cancer and all that stuff, I would have probably sat down and drank myself to death too.
So could you talk a little about how that all went down with the record company and the contract and everything?
Well, the record companies are the worst sharecroppers in the world. Bob Dylan, he invited us to come to New York where he was recording at Columbia Records, and John Hammond asked for us to come by, Senior asked for us to come by his office after the recording, and he said, I'm going to give you guys a recording contract. We signed the contract in a restaurant that was so dark you had to lean down to see. But they sat there and explained it to us so clearly. And this is going to happen like this, and oh, you're going to have this, and we're going to do this for you, and we're going to do that for you. And we're at the dinner table, you know, with these people and thinking, these are good people. We didn't know any different. None of us are lawyer educated. So we signed the contract.
We assumed
that we would be getting royalties and residuals and stuff like that. And they have never offered to pay us one penny of royalties. I'd love to know that I didn't spend all the years except my whole age like this working for free, and I have. It's hard to just come out and say, I'm broke.
Oh, my gosh.
I need help. It's real hard.
This is people truly, I mean, you listen to this, Alexis, and it's like, it's unbelievable that so much time would have gone by, and this is actually what this man has been dealing with for so long. Had anybody before you come to him and said, you know, had he tried to get the word out to other people, or, you know, was he kind of had resigned to his fate?
Yeah. You know, they had certainly tried, and, you know, they had made a number of efforts. I mean, his wife and his son, neither of whom are in the documentary, but both of whom are readily mentioned by Lester, have done tremendous work to try to get some justice, to try to harangue these companies into giving him some of his due, and they all basically just laughed. It was varying degrees of sort of laughing at him or them. And unfortunately, Lester's story is not that unique. And for these artists, there really isn't I mean, it's, you know, remember, in a world before the social hour, in a world before social media, you know, if you were lucky, if you played your cards right and, you know, lucked into, I don't know, a major newspaper article or some kind of news story, maybe you could get some national attention. But it was really hard to organize and it was really hard to get awareness raised. And yeah, I mean, this is something that they have struggled under for decades, literally decades. And living homeless for a number of years before a nonprofit called Sweet Relief, which is a fabulous nonprofit designed just to help artists that are poor, largely as a result of the music industry. And it's frustrating that a nonprofit like that even exists. But there's some awesome people who have been helping along the way, including even Yoko Ono. And you know, we saw this thing bubble up on R Music, which is a subreddit, a music community, obviously. And you know, millions of people saw it and wanted to do something about it. And you know, I was lucky enough to be able to get in touch with Lester and help put this Kickstarter together. But it is really just showing the power of this platform, of the internet. And you know, it's what motivated me so much about it. Not only because here is this legend who's being cheated. Because my dad raised me right, you know, on Stones and Hendrix and Joplin and Chambers Brothers, The Doors, et cetera. But to know that just a few months earlier, we had heard the record companies and the entertainment industry telling us, rather falsely, that all they cared about with Sopa and Pippa was protecting artists' rights. And to think that they could, on the one hand, claim that all they cared about were artists' rights, and on the other, be screwing some of their most successful artists, it's a little disingenuous to say the least. And so I thought, what better way to prove this than just by showing it and hopefully trying to make it right and let the internet fix what the industry had done wrong. So I'm just thrilled with how well it's all turning out.
It's just awesome. And I'm just looking at the page and more than $50,000, $56,524 to be exact, has been raised. Like you mentioned, there are still 5 days to go. Can you talk a little bit about Lester's response to this? What's going to happen next? You know, what are his plans? Because, I mean, it's such an overwhelmingly positive response. And I think so many people want to know, you know, what's the next chapter of Lester's story?
You know, he and his son Dylan have been thrilled. You'll see in some of the update videos that are posted there. It's a tremendous amount of joy and appreciation. We actually did a show at WeWork in San Francisco last night, and we were standing room only by the time it filled up. And you know, we did a little Q&A with Lester, and he just cannot believe how finally now his time really is coming, and it's thanks to the internet. And so, you know, they're going to go into the studio in the next couple of months. The album should be out in April. There are already a couple of Christmas songs that we released early to backers who had supported the campaign. But you know, they're going to go into the studio, they're going to work on this album. And you know, Lester's still touring. Lester's still performing. And so one of the big events with the Kickstarter is for his birthday show in April. I believe it's April 13th. And it'll be out there in California. So that's going to be a big, big event because the album will hopefully have dropped. We'll have this great live show. I'll definitely be out in California for it. And, you know, with some luck, this album will be huge, will be great. And you know what, at the end of the day, just seeing the joy, I mean, he's just incredibly thrilled to actually be able to make an album that he wholly owns. You know, Bread Pig's helping with this, but we don't own anything of it. Every download on iTunes, you know, every Pandora play, you know, that's going to be money going to Lester Chambers, not to anyone else, just Lester. And it's about time. So, you know, who knows? I mean, this guy, he's still making music and he still rocks. He was giving us chills last night as he sang People Get Ready. It's just, he's such an incredible talent. And, you know, in the face of all this adversity, not only what the industry had done to him, but even his own health problems, he still has such an appreciation. He's just such a spirit. Like it's remarkable. So it's just been a privilege to be able to work with him.
Alexis, you've mentioned Bread Pig a couple times. And for anybody who's not totally familiar with what Bread Pig does, what the mission is, and how it's helping Lester Chambers specifically, can you tell us a little bit more about that?
It's a weird, so it's this social enterprise that I'd started a couple years back. We're sort of like a Newman's Own for nerds, except we can't make salad dressing, so we make vegan things. That's the best way to describe it. Our biggest successes actually thus far have been publishing books of all things for popular artists like XKCD, Saturday Morning Breakfast Cereal, and even most recently, Ryan North of Dinosaur Comics just had the most successful Kickstarter for a publishing project to date. He raised $500,000 for a choose your own adventure version of Hamlet called To Be or Not to Be. And so we're the publisher. You know, this music is a little bit out of our wheelhouse, but you know, the way we work is we don't do any of the creative work. You know, it's sort of the antithesis of the old publishing model. We're just saying we're going to do the stuff that the artist doesn't want to do. So we'll do logistical things. We'll make phone calls. We'll sort of handle getting all those Kickstarter things shipped out. We'll handle little social media things. It's I guess kind of almost like a consulting business. But we take a very, very small percentage. The majority, more than 75% of profits from all of our works go to the actual artists. And that's sustainable for us. We can hire people. We can do what we need to do, taking that small cut. And I think it's a sign of how the internet has not obliterated the need for sort of a publishing system or sort of even a record label. But it's obliterated that broken model that was usually flipped where, you know, artists got a minority of the profits and none of the control. We're letting the artists do whatever they need and just sort of doing the few things they don't want to. And then we donate our profits, just like Newman's Own, to related nonprofits. So unfortunately, it doesn't have a really good one sentence elevator pitch. that's the gist. Pig. It is also, in fact, a pig with bread wings, which just confuses me.
I think we asked you about that last time you were on. By the way, somebody in chat looked up your last appearance. It was, I believe, in July of 2011. So it's been a while.
Way back when.
I have to assume, Alexis, you're obviously, as a co-founder of Reddit, and you're still very entrenched in the Reddit community. This must have been perfect for Redditors to kind of band behind this guy who needed somebody to care about him. He needed a break.
Yeah, you know, there is, you know, and you know, there are so many, you know, there are tens of thousands of active subreddits, you know, and this one community, there are a bunch of community music lovers. And to see that response was awesome. But you know what, we see it every day across subreddits, you know, most recently, a bunch of them on r Star Trek, which, shocker, is a subreddit for Star Trek fans, were able to get J.J. Abrams to show early the newest Star Trek film to a super fan who is terminally ill. And, you know, I don't want to heap too much praise on Reddit because it is ultimately just the platform, right? You know, when Twitter helps the Arab Spring, it's not really Twitter doing it. It's people using Twitter. And so likewise, you know, when a bunch of fans on the R Star Trek community help a dying fan get to see a film early, you know, it's people doing it. And that should not be lost. It's just normal people. And that's the magic of the internet, right? Normal people, good intention, just people can actually get together and get something done in a way that we just couldn't have 10 years ago. And I hope it makes us realize that actually most of us, despite the forces that want to make us afraid and want to make us fear, most of us are actually fairly decent people. And when a bunch of us get together, we can get some great things done, whether it's defeating Sopa or Pippa, whether it's helping a Star Trek super fan, or whether it's helping a soul legend, you know, it can make a difference.
I probably shouldn't ask this question because based on what you've just said, it seems like you probably don't have time to do anything else at all because you're so busy. You're traveling, you're speaking. I know you're working on a book, but just out of curiosity, since it is the beginning of 2013, what else will we see from you? You know, what are your plans? Are you just doing more of the great things and kind of defending the internet? What's your plan for this year?
You know, I've been thinking about this. So I got my book coming out without your permission, fall of this year, shameless plug. But, you know, the rest of it, it'll be more of these kinds of bread pig projects. I'm very, very interested also in bringing awesome people sort of from the internet into meat space, you know, just seeing 100+ people all coming out to hear Lester Chambers in the middle of a co-working space in San Francisco and have a Q&A and a jam session. Like, that was really interesting. And I think a bunch of folks came in there probably not really knowing who he was, but coming out with a whole new perspective. And New York is such a rich and diverse city. And when it comes to, well, every meaning of the word diverse, that I want to see more of that stuff happening. And I'd like to help facilitate it. And, you know, frankly, I would also like to spend more time with my cat.
Oh, it's karma.
Thinking of while she's sleeping. I'm sorry. I'm a bad owner.
No, that's any guest who has a cat and makes sure that the cat makes an appearance on the show is all that much better of a guest.
You're high up there now.
Trying to decide whether or not I should adopt a second one because I don't feel like it'll be twice as much work. It'll be like 1.5 times as much work because they can play with each other. But I'm not sure. I don't know. That could be a big change for 2013.
Well, there you go. I know Amber doesn't want this to turn into a cat show, but I can say I have two, and they're really sweet together, and they're kind of best friends. So it might be a good thing for Karma to have a little playmate.
Did you get them at the same time?
I did. Yes. So there's that. That's you kind of have to make the commitment when they're kittens, and then they only know life with each other, and it's very adorable. But you know, adult cats also can end up loving each other as well.
So the social hour has now become the cat hour.
It happens so quickly, too.
I just bypassed the whole cat thing and went right to a human child. So trust me, I understand taking care of something. And you know what? Children adapt when you have another kid a couple of years later. They adapt. So I'm sure cats can figure it out if you want to get another one. That's my contribution.
Well, Alexis, thank you so much for giving us a little bit more insight in the story of Lester Chambers. It's a feel good story, and obviously you get a lot of joy out of being able to help this come to reality. Bread Pig is obviously just such a great organization. You seem to spend so much time, really, truly, as you said, trying to make people happy and band together and actually get some stuff done. So, and best of luck with your book coming out this fall. You'll have to come back on the show when it comes out in the fall and tell us a little bit more about it.
That would be awesome. And maybe I could come and sit in one of those nice chairs in person, too.
I would love that because Amber is very rarely here. In fact, she's only been here once. We've been doing the show for a couple of years, and we've got all sorts of room. So you have an open invite. Anytime you want to come up to the studio, we would be happy to have you.
Thank you.
It's a ton of fun.
I can imagine. Can my cat come, too?
Absolutely. If she wants to travel, we will have her.
Wow. All right. She doesn't need a bigger ego, but okay.
Awesome. Thank you so much. And we look forward to you coming back on the show. Good luck with your book. And we'll be watching you online, of course, in a non-creepy way.
Thank you, ladies. And I'll be watching you guys, too, also in a non-creepy
way. Wonderful. Nobody's creepy. Bye, Alexis. Have a great weekend.
See you guys.
Oh, thanks. Amber, that is awesome. What a fun, we got to do more stuff like that. What a fun, if that's not the social feel-good story, of 2013, I don't know what is.
I know.
Yeah,
what a great way to start off the year just having a story like that and showing the power of the internet and of people who have come together and to do something great like this that they've done for Lester Chambers. So absolutely love this story, and it's been such a huge success, and we'll keep an eye on that and, of course, have Alexis back on whenever he wants to come on because he's always doing something interesting. I can kind of live vicariously through him and his Twitter feed, and I know you follow him as well.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's funny. I was familiar with the Lester story. Specifically because I knew that we were going to have Alexis on the show later in the week, but through my Twitter feed, because there was a show in San Francisco last night, as Alexis mentioned, people that I didn't realize would be interested in any of this were tweeting about how cool it was. So even if I had not been aware of any of this and the fact that this guy was going to get another record deal and he was kind of going to come back and sort of get his due, I would have heard about it anyway. Which is really neat because these are people that, in my world, they're not connected at all, but we're all on the internet. So there is a thread.
Very cool.
All right. Well, we've got quite a bit of news in the show, but I want to remind everyone quickly that we do record the Social Hour live on Fridays, 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific. It's always really fun if you can join us live. Got people in chat or giving us little details on stuff that I get wrong and, helping us out with dates and this and that. But if you can't join us live, you can always watch our show on demand. We make it as easy as possible. twit.tv/TSH. is where all of our show archives live, all of our video archives. You can subscribe to the show there. We have video and audio feeds, depending on what you're looking for. Everything is embedded right on our show pages. And then if we talk about anything, if Alexis mentioned a couple of things and you think, well, I didn't write that down, or how do I find that online? Maybe I'm having a hard time. We just make sure to enter all of our show notes in that little links area at the bottom of every episode page. So you never have to feel lost. We'll make sure that you have all the information of everything that we talked about. And of course, if you have feedback for us, which we'll get to some of your feedback a little later in the show, the social hour at twit.tv is the easiest way to write a little something and let us know. All right, before we get into some of that news I talked about, let's take a moment to thank Squarespace for sponsoring this episode of the Social Hour. you know, right before the show, Jason and I actually were talking about what are we going to do? We want to start new blogs, and what are we going to do? And, you know, you got to have this good idea. What's really nice is that, sure, the idea needs to come from you, but Squarespace is the best way to create a blog, a website, an online portfolio that looks awesome. And there's hosting involved. I mean, Squarespace is really sort of a one-stop shop. It's not just about, ooh, I've got this blog that kind of looks slick and cool. It's hosting. You know, your website's not going to go down. It's customer support. In fact, I had a question for Squarespace. They've got this this new Squarespace version, Squarespace 6. It's their newest. It's not really new anymore, but it's certainly the latest. And I was tinkering around with it, and I had a couple questions of things I got a little stuck on. I asked somebody through the customer support form, which is because I'm a Squarespace user, through the back channel, and I got an answer right away. And I've always had that experience with Squarespace, and I've been using Squarespace over about 5 years now. It is very easy to use. If you want to be a professional and do a lot of hacking up and make the site very, very customized, you could absolutely do that, but it's not necessary. And there are a lot of templates that Squarespace will just get you started with that look beautiful already, and there's really not a whole lot of customizing you have to do unless you want to. If you have a blog on some other platform, you can import very easily. I did that with TypePad back in the day, so you don't have to feel like you have to start over or you know, all of your stuff is going to look really weird and it won't transfer over well. That's very easy. Also, social networking. That's really a big part of what I do online all the time now. So I want my Squarespace blog to reflect that, where I'm active. So you can import Instagram photos or stuff that you're active with on Foursquare or Twitter or Facebook. That's all up to you. Again, Squarespace makes it as easy as possible to create a very, very high quality website, something that will really amaze people. A lot of drag and drop functionality too. I mean, it is absolutely the easiest. So if you are interested, you want to just, I don't know, give it a go, give it a whirl. You can sign up for a free trial just by going to squarespace.com. If you sign up for a free account, you don't even have to give anyone your credit card. This is just something that you can try out. Build the website, see if you like it, and if you decide to purchase a plan, there are a couple different options, monthly or annual plans, and a couple different ranges of what you would pay per month. Use the offer code SOCIALHOUR1, and you get 10% off your first purchase on new accounts. That's a really good deal. Free account. Give it a go. If you decide to purchase a plan, which is, I believe they have an $8 and a $16 monthly plan, and then the annual plans as well. Social Hour 1 is the offer code. Social Hour 1, when you sign up, you get 10% off your first purchase on the account. Squarespace.com, and we thank them so much for sponsoring this episode of The Social Hour. It is a social site for a social show. Amber, there has been quite a bit of news, even though there was a show last week. For anybody who watches The Social Hour regularly, you and I had recorded that a little bit ahead of time. So I feel like we've had a couple weeks of of social news. Even over the holiday, it's been pretty active.
Yeah, it's been really active. I mean, especially with people coming out with top social media trends for 2013, you know, their expectations in terms of what's going to happen this year, the top stories of 2012, it just never ends. And one big story, which I know you have in the rundown here, and I recently read, and a lot of people are talking about, is this story from the Wall Street Journal, there's no avoiding Google Plus.
Yeah, that's even the headline.
I know, hilarious. You know, we've talked about this before on the show, and basically, as the article says, you know, Google is making the integration with Google Plus so tight that it is hard to really get away from Google Plus if you use any of Google's other services.
Yeah, that's right. If you create an account because you want to use Gmail, if you create an account because you want a YouTube account, Google has a variety of services. Zagat is the restaurant review service. Those are all tied with Google. And what will happen is you will then be set up with a Google Plus public profile, whether you want to or not. Now, this is something, before anyone freaks out and goes, oh, my God, that's absolutely unacceptable for, you know, privacy concerns. This is something that you can delete. You can decide to make not public. So, you know, it could be an account that's private, at least as far as searching on the Internet. But by default, this is something that's floating around out there. And there have been reports from people who it's not as it's not as if they don't understand how Google works, but they didn't feel like they were explicitly told, oh, if I leave a review in the Google Play Store for an app that I either liked or didn't like, for example, that's going to be then tied with my public Google Plus profile through my name, whether I really want it to or not. You know, it's not something that was set up by the individual. It's something that Google is saying, well, you know, here's kind of all of your activity within the Google universe. I understand, and Amber, I'll get your thoughts on this too. I understand that Google wants Google Plus to be tightly integrated with all of the Google properties, because Google Plus, although they have very impressive numbers of user engagement, there are always sort of the whispers that people say, well, you know, I use Gmail all the time, but I don't really use Google Plus, because we don't necessarily feel the need to use both. But if it's already sort of there and it's propagating with my activity, that's better for Google. I don't know if it's better for us, though.
Yeah, you know, I don't know. I mean, I think sometimes, because I do use so many Google services, that I do like when things are more tightly integrated, because it just makes it a more seamless experience. But I can see how for some people it seems like it's a bit of an invasion in terms of the way they use certain tools. You know, we've talked about this before on the show. Some people like that separation. They like to operate online as though they're operating in silos, and Google really doesn't allow you to do that. On the flip side of this, I think for people who are looking to build their own social media or brands in terms of using the internet, and for companies as well, building their own brands online, I think the message here is that, you know, Google Plus is not going away. If you want to show up in search terms and you want a bigger and better exposure there, you know, you kind of have to participate. I just wrote an article recently for Fast Company talking about this issue, and I had done a search of Arby's, you know, the fast food chain. And of course, when you search for Arby's on the right-hand side, because there you have a Google Plus page, it shows up. So more and more, I think, as much as people maybe don't want to use Google Plus and want to get away from it, I think there are becoming more compelling reasons to start using it.
Well, you know, I would like the compelling reason for me to use it that the many subscribers that I supposedly have on Google Plus actually reflect real people. I have not used Google Plus, you know, sort of regularly, religiously, for a couple of months, and it's not for no reason. It's because I share, episode of The Social Hour, for example. You know, I try not to spam all my social networks too often, but I want to get the word out. Hey, you know, Amber and I had this great interview with Alexis Ohanian. Check it out. And by far, because I can look at stats, I get so much more response from a place like Twitter or Facebook, where I have many fewer followers than on Google Plus. And it's like, what's the deal? I mean, that's just an engagement problem. So you can tell me that I've got, you know, 500,000 Google Plus followers or subscribers or whatever the word is now, but it's just simply not true. They're not there, or they're not actually interested in anything that I'm saying or doing. So that's another problem. It's Google Plus can't just be this infrastructure that works. It has to actually be a living, breathing thing. And hey, maybe I attracted the wrong people, because I know some of you out there will say Google Plus is thriving. What, you know, you don't have a normal situation, but I've heard other people say the same thing.
I know. I struggle with this a lot. I mean, I think one of my own goals for 2013 is to start using it more. And the reason being that, you know, I think at the end of October, I kind of dropped off and stopped using it on a regular basis. And as I poke back in, I realize that they have improved certain things. There's certain things that I do like about it, and I always find great content there. I just haven't been able to make it part of my daily routine. So I see where you're coming from. And I think at the end of the day, though, at least for me, it seems like some of the content is really good quality content, but it takes me more time to dive into the content there than on Twitter, and therefore I'm somewhat resistant. But I'm going to keep trying, Sarah, as I know you are too.
Yes, I will. I'll keep at it, Amber. This next story is this is very cool. How the blind use Instagram.
Oh, yes. Very cool. This story is something I recently found online, and I thought it was really, really cool to read about how this particular individual, his name is Tommy Edison, he uses Instagram, yet he has been blind since birth. And what he does is he takes photos of things that are around him, and he shares those photos on Instagram. I checked out his Instagram feed. He has a ton of people who like his photos and comment on his photos. He, it turns out, is very active online. In fact, he does a bunch of different things. He has a website called blindfilmcritic.com, and just a really interesting guy. So a different view of images and a different story than you would typically find on Instagram.
Oh my gosh, this is the best. I mean, I'm not only watching, and actually, I'm really impressed with some of his photos because they look. I mean, they look like he's, you know, captured a subject that he could see. But I'm also watching how he uses the accessibility options on his iPhone in order to take a photo, because I'm somewhat familiar with those just because I do a lot of tinkering with my phone. But obviously, I'm not. You know, the target market, right? So accessibility stuff for me, I kind of pass it along when I'm giving people tips like, well, you know, if you have mobility or sight issues, this would be something that's great for you. But here's somebody who's using not only, you know, a smartphone to do really cool things, but to use a photo service. I mean, a free mm-hmm. photo service. He can't even see these photos. But imagine not only do you take a picture of your surroundings based on, what you hear, what you smell, all of your other senses, and then based on the feedback that you get on your photos, you get that much more information about the exact photo that you took.
Yes, that is the most awesome thing. You know, I was just checking out an image that he had taken a few days ago, and there are 212 people who like this particular image. I think it's like, it's two images ago from today. Yeah, it's the second one over from the left, just to the left a little bit. So 212 likes and a number of comments. And as you said, you know, people are describing what the image is. They're saying, hey, is this pizza? Looks like cool light trails. And they go on and on. So try to provide some context to those images for this individual. And, lots of positive feedback. And just what an interesting way almost to crowdsource your vision, if that even makes sense.
Blind Film Critic, all one word on Instagram if you want to follow along. This is so cool. Gosh, I love this. Really, really neat.
It's very cool. Now, Sarah, this is an interesting story. I didn't see this. I know it was only posted a day ago, but Pinterest has acquired Punchfork, but they're going to shut it down. Is that right?
Yeah, Punchfork is being folded into Pinterest. That's how some acquisitions end up working. Now, I was not familiar with Punchfork, Amber, and it's too bad because it sounded like the kind of place I would really like. It was a recipe discovery and sharing site. So not only a place for me to, you know, get some inspiration, but also to be like, I just made the best truffle mac and cheese ever, and I really want to share it with the community and follow folks who have similar interests. 2.5 years old. So this was not just a brand new site. This was a site that was alive and well and thriving, but founded back in May 2010. And had a really great mission. They wanted to build tools to help people cook at home more often and more enjoyably, which is, I mean, that is almost my mission as well. And bringing algorithms and analytics into the world of cooking and recipes. Pinterest and Punchfork's founder and their CEO, his name is Jeff Miller, will be joining the Pinterest engineering team, which is kind of interesting. So he's got some really good back-end knowledge of maybe how to build some of this into Pinterest as well. It's unfortunate for anybody who loves Punchfork and doesn't want it to change, because when these sorts of sites get shut down and become part of a larger site, which Pinterest obviously is, yeah, they're never the same. We've seen that with all those Facebook acquisitions. But it does make a lot of sense for Pinterest to have another layer of a service that's something like Punchfork. That would make me more interested in Pinterest, actually.
Yeah, I mean, and I think, me too. And I think Pinterest, unfortunately, you know, falls into that same camp as Google Plus for me a little bit, in that I've been trying to find reasons to use it, but I don't have as many reasons to come back to use it. So if they can use any help in that area, I think that can be a good thing as well. Now, Sarah, speaking of help in certain areas, for our social tip this week, I have a lot of people come up to me, and I'm sure you do too, because I know you host a show that talks about a bunch of different iOS apps. People pitch me apps all the time, or they want to create apps. And so I stumbled across this really cool tool. It's a wireframing tool. Traditionally, you can go to wireframe.cc and you can use it to map out your own website, what you'd like to see on your own website. Maybe you have an idea for an e-commerce site, whatever it might be. But more interestingly, if you click on the link in the top left-hand corner where it talks about the mobile template, This gives you the option to map out what you might want to create in a mobile app. And I just thought it was a fun, free, and easy tool that people might want to check out if they have an idea in mind for a mobile app and or even a website, and they want an easier way to be able to display or design that and chat about it with someone.
Oh, yeah, this is great. I mean, I often daydream alone, wondering how I'll become rich one day and think, you know, I have all these ideas. They seem really great to me. But boy, you know, if I could only just design like a great app or something, you know, something that a bunch of people would really, really love. Instagram always seems to be the service I come back to, maybe because they sold for $1 billion, but I liked Instagram even before then. But it's like, you know, you get a great idea, but there's a lot of that design element. And Amber, you have a lot more experience with that than I do, but it always, you know, it can trip people up because you don't really know where to start. And you don't necessarily want to pay somebody to map out a bunch of stuff when you could maybe just start at a very simple level like this.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, if you tend to sketch something out and you're just using like a Word document or something like that, it just doesn't look all that professional. So it's nice to have that option to use something like this. It just looks that much better.
Yeah, this is great. So this is wireframe.cc/example if you want to play around with it for yourself. That's a good tip. Hey, we have a little spotlight this week, Amber. I wanted to get your opinion on Facebook Messenger introducing the idea of quick voice messages that can now be sent through the Messenger app. So if I've got this Messenger app up now, I don't know, Jason, if you can take the little... Here we go. All right. I'll give you. So this is I haven't chosen anybody, but if I wanted to choose Amber, I go ahead and choose Amber Mack. And now I could send her a message through Facebook Messenger. Now, this, of course, is a standalone app in addition to the Facebook iOS app. This is, by the way, it's live for Android as well. That's just, you know, just for messaging. So if I choose the little, I could say something in the text area. But if I go ahead and click on the left hand plus sign. Now I've got some options. I've got some emojis that I can use. I can attach a photo that's already in my camera roll. I can take a photo, or I could record my voice. What's this about?
Cool.
Yeah. So if I go ahead and say like, "Hey Amber, I'm on the show with you right now. Bye." All right. There we go. It's sending. And now Amber will get that voice message and it shows up just sort of the way that a text would. It's funny, I was talking about this on TNT a little bit earlier today, and I said, you can, if you don't like the message, you know, you can get rid of it before it sends. And somebody in chat said, no, you can't. It sends right away. And sure enough, it does, because I think it's supposed to be very much a, I say something to you, you know, you don't redo the voicemails over and over kind of a thing. And, I'm getting a different message that's not related to this. But at first I was like, Facebook, it's all about, I don't know, not being on the phone, right? But this is kind of a neat, it's a neat little gimmick. It could be very helpful. But in Canada, and Amber, this is going to apply to you very soon once you're back in snowy Toronto, for Facebook Messenger users, on I believe just the iOS app right now, Facebook is testing the idea of P2P VoIP calling. So it's not just one message that gets sent to you, you listen to it, and then you send me back a message. It would actually be a phone call, like a Skype call or a Vonage call, but it would be through the Facebook Messenger app itself.
Huh. Oh, that's really neat. You know, it's funny because when you sent that message, I got it almost immediately, which is great. I haven't listened to it yet. But just a few minutes ago, I got an email from someone I know. His name is Jim Courtney, and he does a lot of reporting about what's happening with Skype. And he had sent me a message about that voice service you just mentioned, or the possibilities of it, or testing it in Canada. So that seems pretty cool. You know, I could see using the voice messaging, to be honest with you. I sometimes get tired typing stuff. So it was nice to send a voice message just to be able to hear someone's voice. Voice versus just read yet another email message come through.
I agree. And this is the sort of thing where Facebook introduced Facebook Poke a couple of weeks ago, and it's sort of Facebook's answer to Snapchat. Facebook, this could be, there are other services that do short voice messaging. Voxer is one that comes to mind that I've used in the past. I think we've talked about it here on the Social Hour before. So it's not anything that's Facebook isn't introducing anything that other companies haven't already introduced, but it's Facebook, and they have that huge user base.
Oh, yeah. You know, it's funny. Stephen on Twitter had just sent a message saying a lot of people use Audioboo. That is another service that allows you to send little voice messages. But you're right. You know, just having this built into Facebook, I can see a lot of people absolutely loving this. Now, instead of just, you know, drunk texting and messaging, you now have drunk voice.
Yes. Oh, goody.
It's gonna be awesome.
Oh, yes. I feel like we're reverting somehow.
Maybe we are.
All these new services are somehow taking us back a couple steps, but I don't know. Maybe that's just my own immaturity. Should we get into some of our viewer feedback?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. Let's start with the... Oh, you want to take Michael?
Sure. Yeah, I'll do Michael. So first up, Michael writes on Facebook, I have liked a lot of musicians, TV shows, and movies. Some of them can get rather noisy with multiple posts every day or at least multiple posts every week. I find the pages feed to be handy so I can minimize what shows up in my newsfeed where I can focus on more on people and not everything and check through the pages feed every now and then to see what's going on with TV shows I'm watching and bands I'm keeping up with. So I guess, more than anything, he's saying this is kind of a recommendation, you know, something he likes about Facebook. Maybe he's heard of a lot of the things that we don't like and thought he'd share this.
Well, I remember when we were both talking about the pages feed, that was something that Facebook was allowing you to just break out and just look at the pages that you've liked in the past. You and I both sort of went, okay, I guess, you know, it's really helpful, we're not necessarily super excited about this new feature. And it sounds like Michael says, actually, it's really helpful. There are a lot of brands that I can just kind of compartmentalize, look at that feed when I feel like it, and get something out of it. So that's good. We got another email from Mindy who says, I'm a stay-at-home mom who up until 5 years ago worked as an advertising and marketing manager at a large real estate development company. I'm looking to get back into the workforce full-time, and I've noticed that even for the short time that I've been out of the market... I really fell behind when it came to social media. Many of the jobs out there, at least in my field, want somebody with social media experience. And I did that at my previous job, but it's changed. There's a lot of information out there. There's seminars, online classes. They can be very expensive. Blogs, that sort of thing. Can you tell me, she says, in your obviously very informed opinion, how this old dog can get up to speed in addition to watching or listening to your program? First of all, Mindy, thank you for watching and or listening to our program. Hopefully this at least gives you some idea of social stuff that's out there. But Amber, I think this is a tough one because I can really identify with Mindy. I have never been out of the game for as long as 5 years. But a few years ago, I did quit my job and kind of got out of the day-to-day tech life for about a year. And I felt really behind when I was ready to get back into it. It was a very pivotal year. I think I've talked about with you before. It was the year that Twitter launched and Tumblr launched and Web 2.0 was a big deal and Dig was a really big deal. And I mean, I kind of had to like get fired up about all of that stuff late in the game. And I felt really out of the loop and it was a little bit scary. And I know that it's probably not the best advice for Mindy, but I mean, I just sort of threw myself into it. And luckily, I really, really like social. So it's something that I would do in my free time anyway. So it ended up being kind of a fun, cram project. But what advice do you have for her, Amber? I mean, you've got a little one as well. You really never took any time off, though.
I didn't take much time off at all. And I will say it's really hard. There are people, I didn't even tell so many people I was pregnant until maybe a few weeks before I actually had my son, because I was so concerned about what was going to happen with this gap, this period of time where I wouldn't be able to be working at full capacity. And so it is a really scary thing. So I totally understand where she's coming from. I think the good news is that, it can be easy to jump back into things. I think with social media, you can take courses or you can read books and all that stuff will help. But your best experience is that practical hands-on experience. So if you have a local cafe near where you live, or if there's a small business maybe someone in your family owns and you want to take on the responsibility, maybe they don't pay you a lot, maybe just a little bit, to start getting some of these people as part of your client list, then that can really help you to beef up your social media experience and to be thought of as a professional. It doesn't matter how big the company is. Again, it can be a small company, but just having that practical hands-on experience is literally, I think, the best thing you can do for your portfolio.
I think so, too. I really do. And I think that there are absolutely people who can give you a pointer or, hey, this is kind of the cool thing about this social network. Here's where you might want to spend some of your time. Advice is great, but no seminar will prepare you for the time and effort that you actually have to make being part of these networks. You know, there are really no cliff notes for the experience of it, because that's why people take all of this stuff seriously, is because the experience itself is very enriching. Well, it can be anyway. So yeah, I think Mindy, please do let us know. And anybody who's watching or listening right now saying, gosh, there's really a great blog that she should really be reading, please do let us know. Write us at thesocialhour@twit.tv and let us pass it along to Mindy, because the more resources we have from people who have actually had good help, the better, for sure. All right, Amber, we got an infographic of the week.
Yes, so sometimes it's a tweet, sometimes it's a meme. This week it's an infographic. This one is an interesting one, and I think we've spoken about this before on the show, but the idea that oftentimes at companies, for a social media plan to really be successful, for a strategic plan to really come into play, you need that buy-in from the top down. So you need the CEO or the president of the company to really believe in what it is that you plan to do. Now, it's a little bit upsetting when you see this particular infographic that talks about the CEO's social media strategy, and it says their strategy is to ignore it. And by that, they mean ignoring social media. They talk about how a third of CEOs fail to consider their company's social media reputation when making business decisions. And the list of stats goes on and on.
Why do you think this is? I mean, this is almost, you know, this could be something that someone like Mindy, who wrote us about, hey, what, you know, how do I sort of get back into the social media game, should maybe watch out for, because there are people who are at, you know, very high levels of companies that for whatever reason don't think that this is the real deal, or maybe don't want to invest the time, money, or resources into social. Why do you think that is?
Yeah, you know, I think for a lot of these different CEOs, I think they think of it as something they don't need to pay attention to. Maybe they don't realize the seriousness of all of it. I've been in rooms of people, executives before, who think social media is just kind of a fad that happens with young people. You know, they're on Facebook wasting time. So I think that becomes a growing issue. There are lots of examples of CEOs who do take it seriously. There's a big bank, ING Direct, the CEO, Peter Acedo, I think his name is, and he is very active on social media and really truly is a leader for other people in his organization who believe in digital marketing. And there are examples, a few gems here and there of people doing it well. But when it comes to CEOs, I think it's a huge opportunity. You know, obviously the CEO of Zappos, Tony, has done a great job over the years. There are a few other examples, but it looks like based on some of these stats in this study that, you know, it's still not really considered mainstream for a CEO to get involved or to care that much about social media.
I think also, especially with brands that are more established, you know, brands that precede social media by decades, perhaps. Those are probably the brands where it's like, well, you know, we built this without this sort of this modern communication that some of the new companies have to depend on to get the word out. But that's still the wrong attitude, because this stuff changes really quickly. And those are the companies that sometimes you and I highlight that make social media errors or gaffes, which end up being a really big deal, and it would be unavoidable if people who are in charge would take it a little bit more seriously.
Yes, and I think that's going to be the future. You know, I think the future is that, you know, from the top down, people at organizations need to care more and more about their digital reputation, because obviously people are not stopping using the internet, and it will continue to be an issue. So, you know, if I were someone like Mindy, maybe, and I wanted to get into some type of specialty social media business, I may consider a CEO or executive level training, because I think there's a lot of opportunity there.
Absolutely. Hey, quick reminder that we do want to hear from you again. thesocialhour@twit.tv. If anything in the show sparked your interest and you want to give us some feedback or send along a tip or a website or something that you'd like us to cover, please do. We love getting your feedback and we try to put as much of it in the show as possible. If you'd like to leave a voicemail, 2626-SOCIAL. That's our Google voice number. So just type in 2626-SOCIAL on your number pad. You can also record a video if you want to upload it and then send us the link for wherever it lives. Please do. If you send us an attachment, I won't open it. So please do put it up somewhere else and then just send us the link. All right, Amber, it's the part of the show I wait for every week with bated breath, and it's your rad or fad.
All right. So this spreader fad is for people like me who perhaps forget their keys. You know, it has happened to me a few times. I've forgotten my keys and I have to wait for someone else to come and open up the door. Well, this would be an app that would end your need for a spare house key. Now, the idea is it would use NFC technology, near field communications technology, and you could basically program that particular app. And so you would be able to make, allow that particular phone, really anyone's phone, like a plumber coming to the house or a handyman, they would have a certain access code where they would be able to get into your home for a certain amount of time, and then you could turn it off. So people are saying this is safe from hacking. Obviously, there are concerns with this type of technology, but there are benefits too. What do you think, Sarah?
I think, yes, my initial concern is you hack this somehow, and now you have access to my house. Yeah. However, I suppose you could beat down my door too and have access to my house. So let's just take the sort of the scary part out of it. It's great. This has happened to me. It's not that I'm losing my keys all that often, but you know, sometimes I'll be away and maybe a friend of mine is watching my cats while I'm gone and there's some sort of an issue where they don't have a key, or I could really see this coming in handy in certain situations where you're remote and there's some sort of an app that can, even for a short period of time, access your house. It's really, I mean, it's very futuristic. It's very cool. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'm sure this is going to, and justifiably so, scare some folks. But keys suck. I wish we didn't have to use them. They're dirty. They're heavy. They scratch up my phone and my purse. It would be nice if, you know, this is just the first step to one day having keyless everything.
Yeah, I think it's a good idea. I mean, in many ways, too, it seems as though you could have even more control over the security of your home because you were actually managing that security. I had a situation last year where Chris and I decided at the last minute we were planning to, we were on the East Coast of Canada. We thought, oh, we're going to dip into the States, but we needed to get our passport. So I had to get my friend who lived in Toronto a key to open our home while I was away. And it was a total nightmare managing that process. So I think the benefits far outweigh any of the negatives. So I think it's kind of rad. Fits into the rad category.
I think it's rad too. We got two rads from us here. It's our first double rad of the new year. So
yes,
we're off to a good start.
Yes. So ShareKey is rad, and hopefully it will be coming to our phones soon.
Absolutely. Well, Amber, we've come to the end of our hour. With that ShareKey, we are pretty much exactly right on the hour. This was a super fun show. We had Alexis Ohanian. Anybody who's watching us live who missed the beginning of the show, you should really go back and watch it because or listen, because he really has this great story of a very great do-good project that he's been really successful with. And so thanks to everybody who watched us live. Anybody who's watching us on demand, thank you as well. We love having you with us. Thank you for subscribing. And thanks also for getting the word out. If you know anybody who likes the kind of stuff that we talk about on the Social Hour, do tell them about our little show. And maybe they'll like to join us on Fridays as well. Or whenever they
Very
have time.
Cool.
All right, Amber, I guess we will... Actually, next week, we're going to be recording a day early. Mm-hmm. For anybody who's watching live, it'll be Thursday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 11 p.m. Eastern time. But otherwise, if you're subscribing, you'll get the show on Friday as usual.
And we should say, Sarah, too, that we have Guy Kawasaki as a guest next week.
Yes, that's right. It's two guests, two weeks in a row.
Two
yes.
Awesome guests, yeah. So he's going to be talking about his new book, Ape, Author, Publisher, Entrepreneur, How to Self-Publish and Get the Word Out About Your Book. And I'm sure there are so many people who want to hear about this. As you may know, Guy used a traditional publisher for many years, for I think more than 10 books, and then went the self-publishing way. So if anyone knows how to do it, Guy definitely does.
Oh, absolutely. You know, it's funny. I remember exactly when Guy was on last because it was right after I had gotten a cat bite on my finger. Do you remember that awful thing? And that was on St. Patrick's Day. And so it was like, I think he was on our show on like March 18th or the 19th of 2012. So we're just under a year. So that's good because Guy is such a great, compelling guest. And we don't want to let too much time go by without him not being on the show. So I'm very excited about that.
Yeah, it will be awesome.
All right. Until then, you'll be back in Toronto when I see you on Thursday, correct? No, you'll still be in Florida.
I'll be on my way the following day, so I'll still be in Florida for one more week, I'll be back in the snow. Thanks for the reminder.
One more week of pastels and sunshine.
Exactly.
All right, Amber. Well, I will see you on the internet, and thanks to everybody for watching, and we'll see you next week on The Social Hour.
See you soon.